Well, today we have in the studio a fine guitarist, a great composer and arranger, Randy Napoleon. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thanks so much for having me, Keith. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. It's great to finally get you in here. And I've been a fan for a long time, and we've been friends for a long time. And I'd just love to start with some music so everyone can hear what you sound like.
Sounds great. So this is an old tune of mine. Recorded this back in, I think it was 2002, on my first record called Enjoy the Moment. And this is the title track, Enjoy the Moment. Thank you.
Enjoy the Moment with Randy Napoleon. That's a beautiful tune, and you have such a beautiful sound. I'm used to hearing you in a band, but to hear you just play solo like that is such a beautiful sound, man.
Oh, thank you so much.
Tell me a little bit about what the inspiration was for that song.
That was just one of these tunes when you're walking down the street. And the funny thing for me about writing is I'll have long periods where nothing happens, and then you just get a spark and the tune is done. So I was just walking down the street and I started humming it, and I was hanging out with some friends. This is when I was living in New York, and just, you know, it was one of those beautiful days like today. It was springtime, and you know, the sun was shining, and I just, you know, wanted to take a moment to enjoy it. So I guess it's a little bit Hallmark moments, but that was how I felt. So
when you're writing, you said you're walking down the street, and you start humming this song. How do you capture that? What's your process like when you're writing?
Usually I hear a melody, and then, you know, I think about all the options, the ways that I could support that melody. So, you know, start kind of messing with different colors. And once you find the first couple chords, then I feel like it's almost like a puzzle. Like it just, the different pieces start falling into place, and, you know, you keep on sculpting it until you feel that it's done, you know, or it makes sense. Or sometimes, you know, a part of it, I feel like it's not working, and then I'll just be hammering out notes at the piano or sitting at the guitar and searching for a different way to make it work.
So you write on the piano and the guitar?
Yeah. I don't necessarily have more ideas now as I get older, but they develop quicker. I mean, you have an idea of how to kind of put it through the process and turn it into a song. You know all the ingredients that you're going to need to look at and think about. You know, you're going to say, what's going to be happening with the rhythm section here? What's, you know, do I need a specific bass line here? Are there breaks? You know, are there hits? What's the form of the song? Do we need an intro? You know, what are some different kind of harmonic treatments that we could mess with? And as you've got an idea of the different options, you know, more just from experience of doing it, it's I find the songs write themselves really fast.
Well, you mentioned New York, and I know you were born in Brooklyn, but you've had some things happen here along the way. Tell us about Brooklyn. Tell us about where you've been and how you got interested in music and how you began on the guitar.
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, and actually my parents had met in college at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And so I was born in 1977, and Brooklyn was rough at that time. I mean, there was just, in our neighborhood, there was a lot of crime and a lot of chaos. And my parents kind of, you know, remembered Michigan fondly. And so we moved when I was just a kid, and I didn't really remember New York. You know, so I grew up here and stayed in Michigan through my college years, and got a chance to play with, you know, kind of the best musicians in the state, and had some really great mentors, people like Rodney Whitaker and Paul Keller and Rick Rowe. And there was just a really great jazz culture in Michigan at that time, and still is. And so I got exposed to really high-level playing before I went back to New York when I was 22. I moved back because that's, you know, as you know, that's kind of that's the mecca for jazz musicians. And, you know, I wanted to play with all the cats, and I wanted to get on the road and, you know, record and be part of the greater jazz world.
Who were some of your early influences on the guitar?
The first people I checked out were Joe Pass and Wes Montgomery. And it's funny, you know, 25 years later, I still am just mesmerized by them. You know, as you saw when I was in the car, I was still listening to, you know, Joe Pass' solo guitar record that I've had for all these years. And they set the standard for me, Wes, for tone and drive. And the way he'll take simple melodies and develop them. Wes is a master of simplicity and just excitement through the power of riff and groove And then he'll play a pile of bebop and shock you with some virtuosity. But he's just so melodic and such a clear, structured thinker, like the way he takes you from point A to point B to point C, back home to point A. I mean, everything just makes sense. Joe Pass is kind of the Art Tatum of jazz guitar. Just his freedom and his audacity when he's playing solo guitar is unmatched. His accompaniment skills, you know, behind a singer, phrasing, lyricism, speed, just a dazzling master. You know, but from there, I would say I've been interested in anything that's remotely guitar and anything that's remotely jazz, you know, and either or, you know, I appreciate anyone who plays the guitar, like any, you know, great flamenco guitarist or rock guitarist or, you know, anything you might hear is interesting to me, all the different ways there are to play this instrument. It's such a cross-cultural instrument of importance all across the world. I mean, if you go to Brazil, you hear just masterful guitarists everywhere you turn, there's a great guitarist and you know, doing what they do there. And you go to Spain, you hear masterful guitarists, and it's really a different thing. And then in the United States, you know, guitar is such a symbol of, you know, kind of rock and roll and youth culture and romance, and I don't know, there's something very powerful about this instrument. All over the world, there's different ways of dealing with it. And then jazz, to me, I'm just, that's, you know, the musical form that I'm obsessed with. And mostly what I listen to are not guitarists, actually. I mean, I'm mostly listening to trumpet players and saxophone players and piano players. And, you know, the language, most of the architects of this music were not guitarists. And I'm, you know, interested in all of it, you know, from the early period through the, you know, stuff that was recorded yesterday. I'm just into all of it.
It doesn't sound like you started as a rock and roll guitarist. I mean, you know, usually you say guitar, you assume somebody in this country, they grow up listening to rock and roll and then they gravitate towards jazz as they mature. But you started with jazz?
I almost started with jazz. I had my first year, I was just doing anything I could grab and get my hands on. So it was a true potpourri. My good friend Steve Osborne, he owns a store in Ann Arbor called Oz's Music, and he knew I was really hungry and I just wanted to hang around. So he kind of took pity on me and gave me a job sweeping floors in the store. So I would take a long time sweeping the floors, you know, be like, wow, how can anyone take 3 hours sweeping the floors, you know? But I'd just hang out and I'd, you know, observe everyone who came into the store, and, you know, different people would show me different things. So you'd have like the long haired metal dudes, you know, and they'd show me something. And then there'd be, you know, the guys come in and they're, you know, playing Bach on the guitar and they'd, you know, show me a little something, or I'd be checking it out. But I was interested in all of it. But then, you know, I heard Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, and that led me to Joe Pass and, you know, the whole guitar legacy. And I really got bit by that pretty fast. So
was there somebody specific, a teacher or a friend, that turned you on to jazz? Charlie Parker, for instance?
Well, actually, my friend Ben Jansen, a wonderful saxophonist, he grew up right around the corner from me, and he started playing a couple of years before me, and he was really into the music. So he said, yeah, what do you think about this? You know, I mean, we were playing basketball or something. He said, what do you think about this? You know, come check this out. And he played me, you know, Charlie Parker, some of those, you know, early small group recordings. And it just, it messed me up, you know. And then I should add too, my first teacher, you know, the next year, my first teacher in jazz was Lewis Smith, you know, one of the iconic Blue Note era bebop trumpet players. He kind of, he was, you know, a little bit burnt out on the scene, and he loved teaching, and it was to my luck. I mean, it really seems very strange talking about it now, but my, you know, my high school big band director was Lewis Smith, so I got a lot from him.
Well, let's continue with some music. I know you have a few originals that you brought today. I'd love to hear another one of your tunes.
Sure. This next one is something that... Well, this is a funny thing about writing. I was really pleased with this song, and then I realized that it reminded me quite a bit of a common folk song, but then I just kept on tinkering with it until it was disguised. So I'm going to play it. This is something I thought it had that kind of wistful feeling that autumn has, and there's so many tunes that are written about the fall. This is called What Is It About the Fall? So see if you can guess what tune I almost plagiarized on this one.
I think you disguised it pretty well because I can't hear what folk song you may have been referring to.
So when I first started playing this, I realized that it's awfully similar to I've Been Working on the Railroad. But, you know, I changed it enough that it's really just the shape of that first line. So sometimes you get an idea and you realize that it has echoes of something else, and you tinker with it until it's not that anymore.
So it just happened to be similar.
Right.
It wasn't It wasn't that you sat down and were listening to a collection of American folk tunes.
Right, right. I hadn't thought about that song and you know since I was in elementary school, but Sometimes these you know melodic kind of cells, they deposit inside of you and then they come out and... you know, malformed ways. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's part of who we are and where we come from. And you can't help that it happens to be one of those folk songs.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful tune, man.
Thank you.
When did you write that?
Maybe a year or two ago.
Oh, so it's fairly new.
Yeah.
Earlier, you mentioned moving back to New York. What year was that?
That was 1999.
I remember.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're one of the first people I met, actually. You know, one of our mutual friends is Quincy Davis, great drummer. You know, and I was really nervous moving to New York, and he said, "Well, you should give Keith Hall a call." You know, so I don't think we had ever met when you were back here, but you were already out there, you know, forging a trail. And I gave you a ring, and that was, you know, the first week I was in town. I remember I went downtown. I heard you were playing a gig with a singer, and you let me sit in. It was very exciting. So
that's right. Yeah. I just happened to be on my way to a gig with the guitar trio and a singer.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, it's perfect because you can come down and meet a guitar player and maybe sit in.
So you know very well the pilgrimage to New York and, you know, getting your bones together and then coming back home to share the information. So.
Yeah. How long did it take you in New York to get to the point where you felt like you were now making some sort of a living?
I would say my second year, things kind of started to stabilize. And it was an interesting thing because I got a great gig right off the bat. I kind of had a serendipitous good fortune to kind of fall into playing in Benny Green's trio. Just after I moved, I mean, within 6 weeks or something, which is, you know, obviously unheard of. And I can't say it's because I was playing so great. It was something that I pursued and kind of a right time, right place kind of thing. And but with that, you know, we were only working some of the time. Benny was, you know, really in demand with other people's groups, and he would do, you know, all-star gigs with Russell Malone and Christian McBride. So it wasn't a full-time gig, and I really wasn't doing hardly anything else. So by my end of my first year, I had run through all the money I had saved. I mean, I remember actually going to an ATM and it said I had negative $3 in my account. And I didn't know that that was a thing, that you could have less than zero in your account. So, you know, that definitely made an impression on me. And I started teaching just, you know, guitar lessons at a guitar store, little kids teaching them power chords, and it was actually a lot of fun. But that kind of helped me round things out. And then I started working more and more in town. And, you know, I would say probably by the end of my second year, I was in a, you know, decent, at least stable situation. You know, I was doing some concerts with various people and, you know, had more and more kind of street level gigs and, you know, and private parties and just the kind of stuff that keeps you going, and then a little bit of teaching. And, you know, I felt like I was in it. And also I had just kind of settled in, like I had found a more permanent place to live. And, you know, my first couple of years I was floating around between different sublets, and that was really rough. So yeah, I would say after probably 2 years, things were settled in, kind of, you know. Yeah. And then it's, you know, it's always a scramble out there. There's so many great guitarists, and you can never take anything for granted. So you've got to keep on pushing. And I think that's the beautiful thing about it. Actually, it really teaches you to hustle aggressively.
Yes, it does. And I mean, 2 years to feel like you're making a living, sometimes it takes people 5 to 10 years to get to
sure.
that point and to play with a major artist and be doing concerts.
I was kind of lucky, and I was really aggressive. I mean, I think, you know, the advice I give my students is you have to really pursue the stuff that you want to do. So you have to have an idea of who you want to play with and make sure that they can't forget about you.
Yeah.
You know, and then you need to be prepared, and then you need to wait, you know, and hope that something opens up. So
yeah.
That's kind of the formula, I guess.
After you began working with Benny Green, then some other things opened up that led to other gigs, like Michael Bublé.
Yeah.
Was that directly after Benny Green, or was that a...
I went with Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra for a little bit, and then Michael Bublé, and then Freddie Cole. And between those four gigs, those were my main my main things before I moved home. So, but yeah, but I do think that everything is kind of connected in, you know, in this industry. Everybody knows each other and everybody talks, and it's a very small world. So, you know, it was delayed, but I got the Freddie Cole gig from my experience playing with Benny, because Freddie was actually at one of the first concerts I did with Benny. In New York, we were playing at, they used to do concerts in Midtown at the Tourneau Watch Atrium, and Freddie was there. So this was, you know, 1999. And I subbed with the band, with Freddie's group, in 2004 some. But then I was working with Clayton Hamilton at that time. And then he was finally looking for, you know, someone to join the band in 2007. And I've been with him since then. But the seeds were back there, you know, when I first was starting. So every gig's important. You never know who's listening.
That's true. And then how are you still working with Freddie?
Still working with Freddie, yeah.
Now, how often do you guys go out on the road?
Well, I can't do everything with him now because I'm also, as you know, teaching at Michigan State University. So he's been really patient with me in terms of working around my academic schedule. But I still do a lot of dates with him, and he's unbelievably busy. Freddie's 85 years old, and he's still just absolutely kicking butt.
What have you learned working with him?
Oh, man. The thing about Freddie, the musical lessons and the life lessons are linked in my mind because they're the same kinds of things. Freddie, as a player, is extremely patient. He's not going to dazzle you with a whole pile of notes. He really has edited down to the necessary notes to say what he needs to say on the piano, and he's the same way with his singing. It's very direct. It's to the point. He's a man of few words, but then when he says something, it has meaning, and it's enough to let you know what he needs to let you know. He's very patient with himself. You know, so one of the greatest lessons I got from him is he told me, you know, because I tend to be a perfectionist with my guitar playing, and he says, well, Randy, nobody's goof-proof. You know, and that's the thing about Freddie. He's patient. He's calm. He's generous with himself and with others. So I don't know. You know, and I guess music and life are so connected because that affects how you play with people. If you're, you know, if you're really getting hung up on every little detail and every time someone misses a note, you're going to lose kind of the flow and the bigger picture of what's happening on the bandstand, and that's something that Freddie would never do. And so what I've tried to learn from him, because I'm not really wired that way naturally, is just patience, staying relaxed, you know, and not being too hard on myself, too.
Back to your first composition, Enjoy the Moment, right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Let's hear some more music.
All right, cool. This is one that I wrote for one of my friends, great trombonist Vincent Chandler, and he was, you know, this is when I was still a teenager, and he was trying to impress to me the importance of swinging when you play, and you know, he used the analogy of someone could be walking kind of slumped over and hobbling along versus someone with a buoyant and confident walk, you know, so I call this one Walk Like Vince.
Thank you.
Talk Like Vince.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was definitely swinging, man. Whenever I hear you play, I'm expecting to hear a super swinging vibe and just to feel great. And you always play with so much joy. And every time I'm on the bandstand with you where I get to hear you play, it just feels very inclusive and it's easy. And,
man, thank you. Right back at you for sure.
But that was swinging.